AP Radio News. I'm Diane Kepley. Mandatory quarantines for healthcare workers are coming under fire. A nurse who was the first person put into mandatory quarantine after traveling to New Jersey from West Africa writes in the Dallas Morning News the whole process was scary and disorganized. Infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci says he's worried about the impact this may have on the desire of healthcare workers to go to West Africa to help fight this deadly disease.
They're responsible. They know that if, in fact, they have symptoms and have the possibility of transmitting it, that they don't want to get anyone else infected. But the idea of saying that everybody, even people without symptoms, that clearly could be a disincentive.
But New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says protecting the public in this country is more important.
It was my conclusion that we needed to do this to protect the public health of the people of New Jersey. Governor Cuomo agreed, and now Mayor Emanuel agrees. And I think the CDC eventually will come around to our point of view on this.
Both men were on Fox News Sunday. Mandatory 21-day guarantees are in effect in New York, New Jersey, and Illinois for any person coming into the U.S. who has had contact with an Ebola patient. On this next to the last weekend before the election, Governor Christie is in Iowa, where he delivered a fiery speech to Republicans that was sharply critical of President Obama's policies. Christie says he'll wait until after the first of the year to announce whether he will make a White House bid in 2016. A formal ceremony today at Camp Bastion in Helmand Province in Afghanistan as British and U.S. forces lowered flags at the military headquarters and handed over its control to Afghan security forces. The ceremony marks the end of combat operations at the base. Coalition forces will remain in the area in the months ahead to support Afghan security forces. There's word from California. The suspect in the shootings of sheriff's deputies near Sacramento has twice been deported to Mexico. He also has a drug conviction. This is AP Radio News. Dozens of people on Hawaii's Big Island are being told they'll have to get out of their homes as a lava flow moves closer. The 2,000-degree lava is just over a half mile from the main street in the rural town of Pahoa. Emergency crews have been working on building alternate routes to the town in the event the lava flow covers the main road and highway. Are you ready for some football and breakfast tailgating? The NFL has an early start today with an NFC matchup in London.
Kickoff for the Detroit-Atlanta game, the second regular season game of three this year in London, is early afternoon rather than the usual early evening, meaning fans back home had to be primed well ahead of their usual Sunday routines. Atlanta is the home team, giving up one Sunday at the Georgia Dome in exchange for a packed Wembley Stadium.
Kickoff is in about a half an hour. That's AP's Kyle McKinnon in London. Game 5 of the Baseball World Series is tonight in San Francisco, where the Giants put on a hitting display last night to come from behind to beat the Royals 11-4. Game 5's tonight. I'm Diane Kepley, AP Radio News.
It's the end of the year, and federal employees are thinking about where to contribute for this year's combined federal campaign. This year, consider donating to the Capital Area Food Bank, a local charity that distributes 42 million pounds of food each year to the greater Washington, D.C. community through its network of 500 food assistance partners and its direct food distribution programs. Help the Capital Area Food Bank empower the community to take action to solve hunger. Visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org. That's CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Come to the National Academy of Public Administration annual meeting Thursday, November 13th at the DoubleTree in Crystal City. This year's event, Public Administration 2025, How Will Government Adapt?, brings together federal, state, local, and international leaders to discuss and find solutions to the greatest challenges facing our nation's governments. The event features an impressive array of speakers from across government, including OPM Director Catherine Archuleta, OMB Controller Dave Mader, and officials from executive and legislative branch agencies. For more information or to register, visit napawash.org.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why isn't 11 pronounced 1-T-1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza around?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Tyson's Corner office of Offutt Corner. This is your host, Colin Callahan. We have a great lineup of guests today, including Larry Letow, who is the president and CEO of Convergence Technology Consulting. Then we have Greg Gentile, who is the president of Govolution. Then we have Ed Silva and Bali Amagokar, who is the co-founders and co-CEOs of Centerpoint. And then Joe Basile, who is the president and managing partner of Spectrum Careers. But first up, it's my opportunity, my pleasure to introduce you to Larry Letow, who is the president and CEO of Convergence Technology Consulting. Welcome.
How are you?
And what is Convergence Technology Consulting?
Well, Convergence Technology Consulting is an IT firm that focuses on the ability to take data in a secured manner and deliver to any endpoint in the country or wherever you're at. Mm-hmm. And we also secure that endpoint by developing an endpoint monitoring tool that we developed in-house that secures your intellectual property mm-hmm. and companies mm-hmm. or PII data. So right. We work with businesses, corporations, government, colleges, and everything.
So employees can't steal your data?
That's correct. Uh-huh. That's our claim to fame.
Right. And the other is that as information is moving around the cloud, you're helping make sure that it's secure and not floating around out there.
That's right. I mean, we want to encourage the movement.
Right. How large is the company?
It's about 65, 70 people, uh-huh. and we run about 27 million right uh-huh. now.
Great. And how long have you been with the company?
Since 2004.
Mm-hmm. And when did the company, when was it founded?
2 years before that.
Uh-huh. And did you start out as the president and CEO, or how did you get involved?
Started out as the COO, mm-hmm. and really became the face of the company for many, many different reasons. Mm-hmm. The CEO at the time, brilliant guy. Just liked the back seat more. Uh-huh. And then as it grew, naturally, I became president. And then as we bought him out, I became the CEO.
Mm-hmm. And when we were talking in the green room, you said that sort of people was one of the key things that you were good at, working with people and understanding people. How young were you when you first realized that you had a facility or interested in working with people?
Yeah, very young. Just uh-huh. Really spending time with my great-grandparents. I was fortunate to uh-huh. spend time with them and really just learning about their stories. And you got fascinated by that. Mm-hmm. And then as that continues, you start to look at your neighbors and your friends. And you just really, I have a love for people.
Uh-huh. So as you were spending time with your great-grandparents, they would tell you stories and that got you interested in...
Yeah, you realize that history repeats itself, and I think I'm more prepared uh-huh. because I'm not shocked at anything that goes on right now.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it's unusual to have your great grandparents, and then did you spend time also with your grandparents where they were influenced?
Very, very close with my grandfather, mm-hmm. My dad's side. Uh-huh. You always, I think, pick one grandparent right. and just become that tight, and I've been blessed with just terrific parents.
Uh-huh. What did you learn from your grandfather that as you were close with him? What did you pick up that shows up in your management style today?
Well, I think the entrepreneurial style, mm-hmm. I think that there's just no is not an answer. You can right. figure out a way to get things done.
Right.
And the fact is you just have just tremendous respect for everybody, and in return, that'll get delivered back mm-hmm. at you.
So your grandfather was an entrepreneur?
Very much so. He invented, as you see it today, the car antenna.
The in the windshield?
No, not in the windshield, uh-huh. actually. That scared him. Uh-huh. It was the outside the windshield.
Ah, okay. And so did you have an opportunity to go to his business and work as a child?
Yeah, he was out of Brooklyn, New York, and uh-huh. spent summers working on the lines okay. and, you know,
how
got
young
promoted.
Were you? Yeah, how young were you?
Probably about 11, 12 uh-huh. during those periods
yeah,
of time.
Yeah, so that's pretty young. And your 11-year-old friends weren't necessarily going off to work with their grandparents. Was that was that a problem?
No. I just loved him so much. Yeah, spending time with him was just tremendous.
Yeah. What did you learn that in that manufacturing
exposure at 11 years old that stays with you?
That everybody is an expert at something, right? It doesn't matter where you are on that line. You are great at it.
And yeah.
You don't have to be great at everything, just something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I learned that there was greatness everywhere.
And that's a pretty big lesson to learn so young.
Yeah, and I think it allows you to ideate about so many different careers as you grow up, and you're not afraid or jaded by them.
Right. So possibility really showed up for you as a thing that you could pretty much do what you wanted.
Very true.
Your dad was in the Navy?
My dad was a civilian in the Navy, but very high up in the Navy, and my mom was a paralegal.
Mm-hmm. What'd you learn from your dad that you carry with you?
Hard work.
Uh-huh.
I mean, his commitment to doing the job right and his analytical capabilities, I think I still garner a little bit of that.
And your mom?
I think my mom was, I learned from her just surrounding yourself with a key group of people that you cared about.
Mm-hmm. Did you know then, as you were growing up or going to college, that you were going to go into technology? What sparked the entrepreneurial piece of this?
Through my life, I was surrounded by technology. My dad loved technology. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he worked on cars and always had the latest, greatest tools. And my first few jobs out of college were not technology-oriented.
Uh-huh.
But I think I just became fascinated by knowing that's where the future was and I wanted to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. So what do you attribute for your success as you built that career, you know, built your career? What did you bring to it that was really?
I think networking.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ability to know so many people and, you know, it really helps you in a career of sales early on and develop those relationships and have those people always be open to being with you and spending time with you. And I didn't necessarily care about the sale. I cared about the person.
Uh-huh.
And if the sale came, that was great. I knew eventually might not happen today, but eventually would happen over time because the fact is I care about them.
Yeah. And that's a real key thing, it seems to me, about sales, that it isn't about the sale, it's about the person and whether you're meeting the need or that sort of thing.
I mean, I think that you can be successful many ways in sales. I believe there's a line.
Yeah.
Right? And you can be the entertainer or you can be the technical genius. And somewhere on that line, you can be successful.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, you have to pick that style and commit to it.
Yeah. You told a story in the green room about an early sales experience. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I was basically, my dad would drive me to the 7-Eleven as a kid. I would buy what's called these big buddies, big gums. It was about, I'd buy like 50, 60 of them, and I think they were costing me a nickel a piece. And I was selling them for almost like a quarter in the school. It was junior high. And after about, and every night, he didn't realize, but he was taking me to 7-Eleven to basically restock. And eventually I got suspended because I think I was making more than the principal. That was the kid. He said that to my parents, but just he called it disruption, and I called it, you know, profit.
So that was your first example in learning about selling, and what did you learn from that?
I learned that you can make money doing anything.
Uh-huh.
I mean, honestly, I'm selling gum and I'm making money.
Right, so you can sell anything. And there was something else you said, that the sale starts.
Oh, yeah. I believe that when your customer tells you no, that's when the sale starts. I mean, anybody can sell when everybody's nice and giving it. But truly, when you understand why your customer's saying no and can you overcome that and how you go about overcoming that, that's, I think, the key in any sales force and teaching that to to the sales team.
Education's important to you.
Education is my passion.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about that.
Well, I believe I got involved in it through Britt Kerwin, who's the chancellor at the University Systems of Maryland. But what's more important is I believe that if we can give every young person a good education, we can cure everything in this world. And if we're all committed to that, I think it can happen over time. But that's just important to me. We don't, there's self-education, but you truly need a good education, whether it's, you know, at junior high level, at high school, at elementary, whatever it is, we have to let these kids ideate at a very early age that there's not just football stars, but every company and every place you go have rock stars. And if we can get these kids to ideate at a very early age, then we can make them do great things.
Right. How are some ways to do that?
Well, there's our mentorship programs, which are big. I mean, you know, the problem with mentorship is it's a one-on-one relationship. The question is, how do we use technology to expand that? I think the other way to do it is just get involved. There's programs like I forgot what some of them are, but through your high school and through junior high, where, you know, companies can adopt classrooms and, you know, become involved in kids' lives. Mm-hmm. But it's so important, and parents have to play a strong role.
Right. So there's a, I'm hearing sort of a critical thinking role or piece to that as well, that that really helping develop that ideation and curiosity.
It's very important.
And critical thinking. And also there's, you'd mentioned another charities that you work with.
The Little Things for Cancer. Mm-hmm. My wife started a few years ago, and it's just, we raise a lot of money and distribute that. And basically it just helps individuals that are suffering from cancer or their caregivers, mm-hmm. To basically get a little break. Yeah. Or if they need money or they need some services covered, we'll help them.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of great programs out there, but they don't focus on little things.
Mm-hmm. So here you are, president and CEO of a technology company, and what's coming clear to me in the discussion here is that it's really all about people and the relationships.
Well, I mean, we all have a responsibility to give back. Yeah. In some fashion, and you meet just tremendous amount of great people along your path, and for those that need help, you have to help as best you can, and those that don't, you got to find a way to suck them into helping.
Great. And Larry, what's the website?
It's www.convergencetech.us.
Great, thank you. We've been speaking with Larry Littow, who is the president and CEO of Convergence Technology Consulting. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We're going to be back in a moment.
And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
InPowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers, mm-hmm. and leaders, mm-hmm. Achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey, mm-hmm. that the better I was at being a good human being, the better, mm-hmm. leader and the better business I ran, and, mm-hmm. the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for, as well as help the organization move forward.
Well, to move an organization forward, mm-hmm. you've got to master the soft skills of, mm-hmm. dealing with people effectively. Mm-hmm. You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully, mm-hmm. for, mm-hmm. both parties. Mm-hmm. You have to communicate confidently. Mm-hmm. I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong, mm-hmm. leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not, mm-hmm. exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Colin Callahan. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Greg Gentile, who is the president of Govolution. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you for having me.
And what is Govolution?
We're a technology company that specializes in electronic payments and electronic billing.
Uh-huh. And there's a lot of that going on.
Well, there's a huge transition for consumers, uh-huh. Moving away from paper and, right. and doing things electronically.
Right. So you guys are in there making sure that stuff goes from point A to point B.
Sure. And we're trying to do it in a very secure way.
Uh-huh. Well, especially with the recent events.
Yes.
And how large is the company?
The company as a whole is about 1,300 people. Uh-huh. I work with a group in Arlington that, mm-hmm. has about 30 people.
Yeah, okay. And how long have you been with the company?
I've been with the company for 11 years.
Uh-huh. And did you start out as the president?
Oh, I did not. I started off as executive vice president. Uh-huh. And then about 5 years later, the company was acquired. Mm-hmm. And then I continued with the company and was offered the position.
Mm-hmm. You stayed with them. Mm-hmm. And where did you grow up?
Grew up in Northern Virginia.
Mm-hmm. So you're at least to us, you're local.
I'm more local, to yes.
to all those out in the country. And so how young were you when you realized that you had a sense of curiosity about the world?
Well, I would say that I grew up in a family environment, uh-huh. where both of my parents were very curious people,
yeah.
and were very mindful of the fact that you had to learn new things, mm-hmm. to stay relevant.
Yeah. And you'd mentioned a story that you, about 8 or 9, what, you had your first job doing what?
I was, at 8 or 9, I was worked at a farm, uh-huh. Shoveling stalls and feeding horses. But it was great opportunity to learn about work ethic and and getting rewarded.
I
only made a few dollars, but I was very, very proud of that.
And how do you think the work ethic that you learned there carries forward today?
Oh, well, I think it was very important for me to understand how the value that you create in an organization is greatly attributed to the work effort that you put forward.
And how do you instill that in the folks that work for you today?
Well, that's a great question. I think that, first of all, we hire people that have that.
you look for it in hiring.
We look for it in hiring. But I think it's also people enjoy certain aspects of their job, and often that goes to where their strengths are. And so what we try to do is engage people in their strengths so that we get the best out of people.
What were your mom and dad doing as you were growing up?
Well, both my parents worked, and as an only child, that meant that I spent a lot of time either by myself or pursuing other interests, like working at the farm. Both of them had a pretty significant influence on my life, though.
What did you learn from your mom that you carry today in your work ethic, work style?
Well, my mother was a very passionate person. She grew up in a very, very small town in the Northwest Territory of Canada. And so by age 18, she had only experienced what it was like to be in a town of maybe 50 or 60 people. And so everything she saw after 18 was just mind-blowing for her. It was so exciting for her to see cities and towns, and she traveled extensively. So passion, I think, was the thing that I got from her.
And sounds like a curiosity about life. And
Most certainly, because everything was new to her. So she was a very curious person by nature.
When people think about banking transactions and that kind of thing, they don't necessarily think of people as passionate, and yet it's very clear, both in your voice and sitting with you, that there's this deep passion about about life.
Yes, well, and it's very interesting because we have a lot of stakeholders in the business that we provide. We have a consumer who wants a convenient way to pay their bills. They're our customer. We have businesses, a utility company or an insurance company who wants to optimize their operations, so they're a stakeholder. And then we have the financial institutions who actually process the transactions. So what keeps it interesting for us is that we have so many people or types of organizations that we have to please in the process. And then technology, new technologies is very, very disruptive to our business and different business models. So we're constantly having to change to stay relevant.
Right. Well, that's from a curiosity standpoint, and creativity, I guess, is the other thing that's clearly there. Your dad was, you said, had a few careers.
My father had five or six very successful careers. He started off in the military and had a successful career there. He became an engineer and had a successful career there. He went to school at night and got an MBA in finance. Eventually was the chief financial officer for a very large organization. And then at 65, he decided to become an architect and was a successful architect for about 10 years.
Yeah. As you saw your dad making those changes and moving through as you were growing up, what did you learn from that?
Well, I think my father believed very strongly that it was important to self-educate, that it really was the responsibility of an individual to pursue their interests and look into new things. And I think he really felt that you could become an expert on anything in a relatively short period of time if you just simply went and got the resources that you needed to read and study.
What was great about being an only child?
Well, I think the great thing is that when my parents did have time, I got all of the attention. The tough part, of course, is that both of them worked. So I had a lot of time on my own. But I think in the end, I was able to, get the great things out of it. And my folks were very influential, and I was able to grasp whatever they gave me.
How about other mentors along the way that helped you on your path to govolution?
Well, it's interesting. As I look back over the course of the years, I've had so many wonderful people who have influenced me in different ways. I would say that When I was working on the farm, there was a woman who owned that farm who had a tremendous passion for what she did, and learned an awful lot about work ethic as well as pursuing dreams. I've had other individuals. I worked for a pool construction company, and the fellow who owned the business would help me dig, the pools.
Yeah.
And he was a tremendous entrepreneur because he figured out how to transition from residential pools to commercial pools. So along the way, I've tried to take what I could get out of the people that I've met and been pretty fortunate.
Mm-hmm. And there's something that feels grounding about, starting with the manual labor as a kid and kind of working your way up, that there's an appreciation. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't just that job. It was also I worked as a dishwasher at Denny's and had some other phenomenal jobs, all of which taught me something.
Yeah.
And I think there is great value in the people that perform those services. And there's a certain uniqueness about the services industry where it's not just work ethic, but it's about caring about what you do.
And is your father aware of your success?
Yes, my father was aware. I've held a number of CEO or president positions over the last number of years, and he was very encouraging, and he saw in his later years that I was able to obtain, I think, there was a high level of expectation on his part, but he never pushed or pressured me in that regard.
If he were here today, what would he say about you?
I think my father would laugh and say, I can't believe that you're on a radio show.
Great. And, Greg, what's the website?
It's govolution.com.
Great. Thank you. We've been speaking with Greg Gentile, who is the president of Govolution. And don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Cassie Self, Marketing Manager, Buchanan & Edwards. Cassie, what is Buchanan & Edwards?
We are an IT consulting firm, and we are committed to bringing innovation and efficiency to our federal clients.
And what's your role in the company?
My role in the company is leading both the internal and external marketing and communications initiatives, and really connecting our employees with our executives and our management team, but then also, relaying our messages to our customers.
And what do you like most about your job?
The people.
What is it about the people that makes them special?
Everybody at the company has a certain level of excitement, and you really see their passion for helping our clients.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think your clients appreciate about the company?
I think that our clients, first, they appreciate our quality. All of our employees are really committed to helping our clients improve their business functions and bringing that level of quality.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about your work?
I would say the people again. The people that I interact with every day, and the team that I work with, and being able to share our message and our solution with our clients.
That's great. Who do you think is the perfect kind of client for Buchanan Edwards?
An organization that an organization that has a lot of processes set in place that could be improved with technology, by bringing efficiency and automating a lot of stuff.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.buchanan-edwards.com.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Cassie Self, Marketing Manager at Buchanan & Edwards. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the
most
out of them.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO of The Success Doctor. This is Les Mullen, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. It's now my pleasure to introduce Ed Sylvia and Bali Amagarkar, who are the co-founders and co-CEOs of CenterPoint. Welcome. And what is CenterPoint?
CenterPoint, it's a cybersecurity firm focusing primarily on the homeland security and intelligence community. Within the cybersecurity space, we manage and operate cybersecurity operation centers. Mm-hmm. We do threat analysis as well as build secure mobile solutions for the government.
And how long have you been in business?
This company has been in business since February of this year, we've been in business for over 20 years altogether.
This isn't your first business.
No, actually, this is my fourth business for me.
Uh-huh. And Bali, what is it that when you sell a business, most people think, oh, that's the pinnacle. We want to build a business, sell it, and then put our feet up. And you guys seem to have started another business right away. What drives that?
Actually, it's just the excitement of having your own thing, creating jobs and building something. And so that was very exciting the first time around. Mm-hmm. We definitely had to do it again.
Mm-hmm. And you were the CEO of the previous business?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. And then Ed joined you?
Yes, Ed joined us about 10 years ago when we started getting into the federal sector. Mm-hmm. Ed has been the federal arena for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And so we actually, in order for us to expand our federal market, we had Ed as our leadership team, on our leadership team to run that sector.
Mm-hmm. So when you started the new business, did you have the idea of, yes, let's all do the business together?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yes.
And what's challenging about working together?
I think that it's more complimentary than it is challenging, to be honest. I think of it as the carrot and the stick. Bali being the carrot and me being the stick. But and what I mean by that is, we have complementary skills and strengths, and we really augment and complement each other in many ways. Right. So it hasn't been a challenge. It's been more of a blessing and really been great for the business for many years.
And how young were you when you realized that you were, so to speak, the stick, or that you had this drive?
I think it was probably around the age of 17 when I came to the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I was working as a cleaning offices, and I quickly realized that that's not what I wanted to do, and that I wanted to actually be sitting in that office and have someone else can clean that office. Uh-huh. Through my grown-up years, my father, success and college were not an option. There's where it must be. Mm-hmm. And he was very driven in both. And that genetically came to me.
Right.
And so when I was working as a cleaning person, I quickly became aware that, I needed to drive myself to be better. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I became very ruthless, for lack of a better word, about business and about achieving success.
Right. And so you put yourself through school and worked that whole process.
That's correct. Put myself through college. I have worked three jobs to put myself through school.
Yeah.
And put myself through college. Yeah. That way, yes.
Well, that certainly would make one driven. And Bali, where did you grow up?
Where did I go? Mm-hmm. I grew up in the Chicago area. Uh-huh. I was born in India mm-hmm. and then moved to Chicago when I was about 13, mm-hmm. 14 years old as a freshman in high school.
So that's a pretty big challenge to be a freshman in high school and drop in the middle of Chicago.
It really was initially, especially in the 80s when there wasn't, it wasn't very common mm-hmm. For a lot of, actually, in my whole high school, I think there were about 20 Indians, uh-huh. and the only Indian that people had heard of was Gandhi at the time. So initially, yes, there's a culture shock. There's also learning the language shock, mm-hmm. All of that. But very quickly, I did end up assimilating and becoming an American a couple of years later.
What did you? What do you think you learned from that? From that sort of rigor of coming here at 13 that stays with you today?
I think a lot. I think perseverance and collaboration mm-hmm. And, of course, networking, all of that you end up eventually applying to your business.
Yeah. And you were here with your family.
Yes.
But, Ed, you were here alone.
Yes. I came to the U.S. right after graduating from high school. I came at the age of 17 uh-huh. and did come along and became obsessed with just being succeeding. Uh-huh. So I looked around me and saw the communities of the various socioeconomic groups and cultural groups that existed in the area, in the D.C. area. Mm-hmm. I quickly became aware that I wanted to, number one, integrate myself into the American society, mm-hmm. Both economically and culturally. So I worked very hard to just become successful in the sort of the mainstream American business mm-hmm. way of life.
Mm-hmm. What did you know when you got here? Did you know pretty quickly that you didn't want to go back to Venezuela, but that you wanted to stay and succeed here?
Yes. When I originally came here, I was here for 3 months when I realized, okay, I want to go to college here too. Mm-hmm. I applied to college. It took me a year and a half to get into college. Mm-hmm. Once I did, I knew that this was where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And then met my future wife in college, and I knew then I would not be going back for more than one reason, not just a business reason.
So Bali, you said that your family, you told us in the green room, that your family had a business here.
Yes, uh-huh. yes, we did. My family had Mr. Donut Shops, mm-hmm. and we all worked day and night. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, I will never go into business ever again. So I was going to school to make sure that I continue as a professional. But having a business wasn't going to be an option for me. Mm-hmm. But right after I finished, actually barely had finished school when I started my first business.
And so much
it wasn't.
For that.
Yeah. Well, I lied to myself for many years mm-hmm. saying that it wasn't a 24/7 business. Mm-hmm. But I haven't met a business person yet that doesn't work 24/7. Mm-hmm. So it was very different. But it became a business. Once I got that entrepreneur bug, I never really looked back. Mm-hmm. So it was fun growing up and having those donut shops. I would not have a donut shop again, uh-huh. but I do like having an IT shop.
Right. Well, and I'm guessing that working in it so young that you learned a lot of about the basics of business.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Learned the hard work of business.
Yeah.
And wanting to succeed, much like what Ed just said about himself as well, and perseverance.
Yeah. What did you learn from your mom that shows up in your day-to-day business style?
Hard work mm-hmm. and never give up. Not to succeed isn't an option.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily hard work. My mom never sits still, really.
And Ed, did you know that you wanted to start a business, or as you went through the process, it sort of happened?
No, I mean, I think at some point I started my first business while I was still in college. I started an IT firm doing federal government contracting.
Yeah, okay.
And I pretty quickly learned that, you know, figure out that I wanted to have my own business. And that was my ticket to becoming successful in my own career. And even back to when I was a kid, I mean, at the age of 12, my dad was a financial kind of guy and also a professor, a university professor. And I was trying to convince him that he should start a business. Uh-huh. And I designed a logo for him and told him, you've got to go into business. So I think I was thinking about doing business even back then at the age of 12.
How old were you, 12?
I was 12 years old,
wow,
yes.
Wow. Yeah. And I was going to say, where was the influence growing up in entrepreneurial? With my father, grandfather?
Definitely with my father. My mm-hmm. father was, you know, although he didn't go into that business that I so badly wanted him to go into, he was a very driven individual. Again, education and success were not an option for him. Uh-huh. So that was my dad was really a big influence in my entrepreneurial spirit.
Then what are the things that you find as you work together that are the complementary pieces? How did you come to that?
I think one of the best things are really the trust mm-hmm. that we have. That's a huge factor. Working with the best friend and coming to work every day and knowing that we enjoy working together, we enjoy collaborating, we enjoy doing what we do. We've done it for so long. So that's really my piece, and I love the fact that Ed said I'm a carrot of this partnership. So that
the carrot and stick analogy really extends to the reason why we complement each other. Uh-huh. Bali is very good at sort of sitting back and thinking things through, working with people, establishing relationships. I am more of a let's get this done and sort of jumping in and getting it done. And mm-hmm. So those two things are very, both are very much needed in a business at the leadership level. And so we have those, and we really complement each other.
Did you have other mentors besides your mom and dad growing up that influenced you?
Actually, I did. I did have a university professor in college who was a businessman himself, and I used to love the fact that he would come to class flying. He would fly in from a business trip, and come rushing to class and tell me. I would ask him, "Where were you?" Then he was, "Oh, I was in Chicago. I was in L.A. Wherever he was doing a business deal." Uh-huh, uh-huh. And I always sort of admire that. So I confided in him that I wanted to be in business at some point, and he sort of started, just kind of telling me things that you needed to do to be in business. So he was not only as a role model, but also in teaching me some of the things that I needed to know in order to be in business.
Yeah, great. What's the real quick in the time we have left? What would be the one thing you would tell kids who might be listening who are in a similar situation of kind of arriving here and trying to work through and figure out America? What's the quick piece of advice you'd give?
I think from my perspective, really integrate into society, mm-hmm. integrate into society, and don't ever give up. Don't let anyone tell you that you can't do it. And that extends to any kids from any country. Yeah. But perseverance.
And I think also to add on to that is to don't hold on to the old. There's so many new friends. It does take time. Really, we could sit here and say anything, but for a kid, and I remember being a kid and having many friends back home, and we weren't here to stay. My parents said we were going back. We were only here for the summer. And then they said we're only staying for another week or so. But so it's just changing into the new life and stick with it.
Great. What's the website?
www.centerpoint.biz.
Great. We've been speaking with Ed Sylvia and Bali Amagaker, the co-founders and co-CEOs of Centerpoint. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener. And I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn & Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does it mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Cohn & Burnett so special?
We are, first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients. That's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand where they're, what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Cohn & Burnett?
CohnAndBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A and D in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn & Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers and leaders achieve professional success by developing themselves personally. I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey that the better I was at being a good human being, the better leader and the better business I ran and the more successful I was.
So you're able to help folks achieve what they're looking for as well as help the organization move forward.
To move an organization forward, you've got to master the soft skills of dealing with people effectively. You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully for both parties. You have to communicate confidently. I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. They're drawn to this work, but not exclusively.
To learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Cassie Self, Marketing Manager, Buchanan & Edwards. Cassie, what is Buchanan & Edwards?
We are an IT consulting firm, and we are committed to bringing innovation and efficiency to our federal clients.
And what's your role in the company?
My role in the company is leading both the internal and external marketing and communications initiatives, and really connecting our employees with our executives and our management team, but then also, you know, relaying our messages to our customers.
And what do you like most about your job?
The people.
What is it about the people that makes them special?
Everybody at the company has a certain level of excitement, and you really see their passion for helping our clients.
And what do you think your clients appreciate about the company?
I think that our clients, first, they appreciate our quality. All of our employees are really committed to helping our clients improve their business functions and bringing that level of quality.
And what do you enjoy most about your work?
I would say the people again, you know, the people that I interact with every day and the team that I work with, and being able to share our message and our, you know, our solution with our clients.
That's great. Who do you think is the perfect kind of client for Buchanan Edwards?
An organization that that, you know, that needs to an organization that has a lot of processes set in place that could be improved with technology, improved, you know, by bringing efficiency and, you know, automating a lot of stuff.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.buchanan-edwards.com.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Cassie Self, Marketing Manager at Buchanan and Edwards. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Colin Callahan, and it's my pleasure now to introduce Joe Bissell, who is the President and Managing Partner of Spectrum Careers. Joe, welcome, and tell us, what is Spectrum Careers?
Thanks, Colin. Happy to be here. Spectrum Careers is a financial and accounting staffing firm based here in Tysons Corner, Virginia. We also do IT staffing as well, both permanent placement as well as consulting.
And how long have you been with the company?
17 years.
Wow. So yeah, that's a long time.
It is.
And how big is the company?
We have about 35 internal employees and about 125 consultants out.
Wow. That's pretty big. And how did you get a job with the company?
Well, I was one of the original founders, partners, if you will, and really didn't really know any better.
Right.
I was working for another staffing firm and did that for about 6 months and realized that if I was going to do it, why not do it on my own? Met my business partner, Kevin Kelly, through a mutual friend, and we just said, why not? And again, I think we were, at least I was probably too young to know any better. I figured, well, if this doesn't work, you can always do something else.
And here you are.
And here we are. Yeah, pretty amazing.
I guess it's working.
Right, right.
So how young were you when you got your first job or first made money, say, before the age of, say, 14?
I was actually pretty young. My parents instilled a work ethic pretty early, and my father, I grew up in Roanoke, Virginia, and he was a doctor there, and he said, you know, if you want to make some money, come clean my office, empty the waste baskets, and do this. And this was over and above kind of the household chores. So that was probably my first taste of it.
Mm-hmm. So it was helping your dad.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then did you find other jobs as well?
Yeah. No, I mean, from a young age, you know, the rule was kind of if you want money, then go work for it. So I went out a paper route like most people do traditionally. And then I figured, you know, maybe cutting grass was a little bit more lucrative. So I was able to do that. You know, it was kind of interesting. I didn't have a lawnmower. My dad wouldn't let me use ours. But one day I showed up and there was a lawnmower, but there was a note saying, you owe me $250. It's yours to use. So, you know, I went out to the local neighborhoods, got a bunch of yards, and, you know, it was great.
And
it was a great learning experience. Yeah.
What, as you decided you were going to start a business, what do you think those early experiences
I think they were great, you know, and it kind of carried with me. Even through school, I always sold T-shirts at school, work camps in the summer. We would sell T-shirts, you know, University of Richmond soccer T-shirts. We would do things through the fraternity. Like, it was kind of anything, you know, whatever you could do to be an entrepreneur and put some extra cash in your pocket. You know, I worked for the athletic department, worked the basketball games. And the more experiences you had, I think the more you learned how to do sales and and kind of enjoy it along the way.
Is that the piece you like the most, is the sales piece?
Definitely. Yeah, no question.
How young were you when you figured that out, do you think?
Probably 11 years old when I was going door to door, trying to get people to let me cut their grass. And if they already had a service, you know, I'll do it cheaper. So
what did you learn that you carry forward from a sales perspective in that?
Well, I think that if you're honest and you tell people what you're going to do and then you follow through with it, then you're probably going to have a repeat customer. And it's pretty fundamental. And people think, oh, that makes sense, but it's just not always the case.
Right.
And that's what we kind of try and do with Spectrum, and I think we've been fortunate to have some clients for really since our inception.
Mm-hmm. And just delivering what you say you're going to deliver.
Pretty much.
what were your mom and dad doing when you were growing up?
They were great. I mean, big influence on me. My dad was a physician in Roanoke, Virginia. They're both originally from Youngstown, Ohio, which is kind of a steel town, kind of a rough, so to speak, place to grow up. My mom was my dad's office manager, but also stay-at-home mom and helped raise us. But that's what they did. I had an older sister, younger brother. But, you know, great examples for me.
Yeah. What's true about the middle child?
What's true about it?
Yeah, being the middle child.
You know, there's the stereotypes, I guess. But I think as a middle child, you're responsible for your younger brother. And then having an older sister, you're somewhat responsible for her, too, because you're supposed to, even if you're 3 years younger, be able to protect her, so to speak. And I think there's some expectations on the middle child that maybe the firstborn gets a certain level of attention, and the baby doesn't get as, you know, gets all the attention. But the middle child, you're kind of on your own, so you're gonna have to find your way.
And a lot is expected of you.
I guess so. I mean, put it this way: I wasn't allowed to play sports unless I practiced my piano for 30 minutes a day.
Uh-huh.
No TV during the week. A lot of rules.
Yeah,
it only applied to me, it seemed like.
And how does that structure help today, do you think? That structure that you grew up with?
Well, I don't know so much the structure, but I think, you know, there was always an emphasis on discipline and achievement and doing the best you can. And that always has stayed with me. You know, I can still hear my dad's voice in the back of my head when I get up to go to work every morning. Do the best you can. The rest will take care of itself.
Uh-huh.
And if the best you can didn't work out, then you probably didn't do the best you can.
Yeah. Is there something that you learned from your mom that shows up in the way you manage your company today?
Absolutely. You know, my mom is about as gracious a person as you're going to meet, and I'm sure a lot of people say that about their mothers, but she can go in any room, get along with anyone, make people feel comfortable. That's the one thing she probably does, and I think that's recognizing it later, you know, as much time as I've spent with them, that that's a skill. It's an acquired trait, and that's definitely something I've taken from her that allows me, I think, to be successful in part because I think in sales you have to make people feel comfortable and be genuine, and that's my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were there other mentors along the way besides your mom and dad that gave you a turning point?
You know, I mean, they were pretty strong emphasis and influence on me.
Yeah.
I would say my friends have been a lot of my mentors. You know, I've been fortunate that a lot of my friends have been entrepreneurs, own their own businesses. You can bounce ideas off of them. Mm-hmm. So we've been lucky that that collective group has brought a lot in terms of just influence and ideas. So I would say good friends of mine, even some that have been on the show, have been some good mentors and influences for me.
Great. And you said you grew up in Roanoke.
I did. Born in Cleveland.
Born in Cleveland.
Yeah, well. Go Browns on the comeback. And now we got LeBron back. So,
here's sort of an off the wall question.
Sure.
What was your first car?
My first car was a Dodge Ram Charger. Yeah.
And when did you get it?
When I was 16, but I didn't. Technically, it wasn't mine. You know, I was leasing it from my father, I guess is the best way to put it. And I wasn't allowed to drive it for the first month at night. And, of course, the first month I was allowed out at night to drive it. I had two girls in the car with me and thought I would show off and started a race with one of my friends. And we were pulled over 50 feet later and charged with reckless driving. So I didn't have the car for much longer after that. I had another timeout period. But.
So is your dad aware of your success?
You know, I think he, and success is relative. I think he defines success as are you healthy? Are you happy? Are you living life positively? So I think in that regard, he's aware of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he were here, what do you think he'd say about you?
I think he would say, I'm proud of you. Keep it up. But you have a lot more work ahead of you.
Well, thank you. Greg, what's the website?
Our website, www.spectrumcareers.com.
Great. Thank you. We've had a great lineup of guests today. We had Larry Latow, who is the president and CEO of Convergys Technology Consulting. We had Greg Gentile, who is the president of Govolution. We had Ed Sylvia and Bali Amagarkar, who were the co-founders and co-CEO of Centerpoint. And then we just were speaking with Joe Basile, who is the president and managing partner of Spectrum Careers.
This I'd like to.